stay at home, put your feet up and cozy up to a cricket legend. It's cricket, only better.
What an innings, what a player. Take a bow, Ben Stokes.
Brian Charles Lara becomes the first man in the history of the game to register a score of 400.
Six sixes in an over. Yuvraj Singh finishes things off in style.
England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Betfair Betting Podcast presents Cricket, Only Better.
Welcome back to Cricket, Only Better. I'm Ed Hawkins. We're here again to provide a little bit of normality, even though no actual cricket is taking place. Still got a bumper show, but first, where's Sam Collins? Worcester, week one of isolation. Up a tree outside my house in week two.
Still there, Ed. Still there. As you'd know, if you checked my shopping list, which I pinned to the bottom of the tree, I am not one to defy government regulations, no unnecessary journeys. Amazingly, I've managed to find a way to charge my phone up here, long extension lead, but I am a bit hungry, so if you could send some dinner up later.
Is that why my TV is not working? You've stolen the electricity charge from my TV to fire up your phone.
That will be it. Hoping for some rain, need a shower. But, you know, generally in fine fettle. What have we got for our loyal listeners this week, Ed? I'm hoping a real treat. I need something to keep me going.
Corona-free times, we'd be settling down for an India Premier League feast. So with that in mind, we've got in big, really big. And we bring you part one of our Q&A with West Indies legend Michael Holding. How about that?
Mikey, Mythbuster winner, of course. Talking of Mythbuster, Gordon Greenidge, Mikey's old teammate, is under the microscope this week, Ed. And if he does not come up top trumps, so to speak, then I don't know who will. So this is a big week for me in Mythbuster.
Is it? Okay. Fingers crossed. And we've got Stuart Conroy, Betfair Sportsbook Cricket Odds Compiler, returning for our Secrets of a Cricket Odds Maker feature and a masterclass, Cricket Betting's Golden Rules. Continuing our masterclass series now on how to bet sensibly, studiously, let's try to pin down some golden rules, Sam Collins.
Don't we do that every week, Ed? I mean, bet responsibly. Don't bet off your head on popcorn.
Yeah, I know.
Don't bet. I mean,
we're contractually obliged to say those things, but I thought this week we'd actually put some meat on the bones and go into some detail. So, I mean, I got the idea from homeschooling my five-year-old today. We weren't doing phonics or basic adding and subtracting. We were nailing the golden rules. She's got to learn, Sam.
I'm a little bit worried, Ed, about how you're referring to our audience, how many people that may be, I'm not sure. But go on then. What is your first golden rule?
Nice and easy one, this. Keep a record of your bets. An example, I tried this for the first time several years back and discovered that I had a very, very poor record on the top bowler markets. So I stopped betting on them until I found a system or rationale which I felt robust. Look, and this is a rule which goes for any type of betting. You should really keep a record of every bet you're having. Now, a lot of people interested in betting won't want to do this because they're either lazy or afraid. And I'd certainly understand both viewpoints, probably more so the latter, because it's tough to see in black and white the rotten fruits of your labour if you're a loser. But it will make you more likely to be a winner in the long run. So it really is worth doing. You know, having a strict record will ensure that you know whether you're on the fast route to the poorhouse or not. And if our business is all about finding value, and it absolutely is, what better way to understand value by judging yourself on your own record?
Makes a lot of sense, Ed. You've gone well beyond bet responsibly there. So I like it. What is your second rule?
Only bet if you believe the price is wrong, Sam. A key disciplinary point. We don't want to be betting for the sake of it, for the buzz, for the rush, for the adrenaline. That's definitely a fast route to the poorhouse, and it suggests you might have an issue, and it's really about taking responsibility and betting responsibility. So it's akin to switching on a telly, seeing there's a T20 on and reckoning to watch it, you need to have an interest. No thanks, that's not what we're about. If you've done your research and you spent a lot of time doing that and have discovered that, say, Betfair Sportsbook have made a mistake or there is an edge for you on the Betfair Exchange, have a bet by all means. But you should only do so if there is a reason that you absolutely believe that you know something that the layers don't, or the people who are offering the prize don't. And if you do believe that, spend some time checking, double checking, scouting around for news or whatever, because there might be something you've missed and the edge that you've found could be exploded. So double check, but only bet if you know or if you believe that a mistake has been made.
I like the cricketing analogy, that edge you've found. Go on then, let's have your third one and then we'll call it quits.
Be flexible. You know me, Sam, I'm very flexible, aren't I? Not stubborn in any way. Be prepared to admit you're wrong. Why are you laughing? Be prepared to admit you're wrong. This is also a great life lesson. Don't be too big to say sorry, okay? Or the fact that you got something wrong.
Your marriage counselling podcast that will follow Hot on the Heels, sponsored by Betfair.
Indeed. You might form an opinion or on a player or a team and then you'll back that opinion. But over time, don't steadfastly stick to it when you're losing money or it's patently obvious that you've got that wrong. England in the World Cup for me, very, very much against them before a ball was bowled, largely because of their poor bowling record. Jofra Archer came in and completely revolutionised their bowling. And I think at the time we were saying, well, they're extremely short, one of the shortest World Cup favourites there's ever been. They've got a terrible record defending targets. And although we recognised Jofra was an extraordinary talent, we didn't have any data to suggest that he was going to make a big enough impact over that tournament to suggest that they were a good bet. Now, I was wrong. And by the time the semi-final came round, I had to admit that I was wrong. And they were the best team. So you can't be successful if you're stubborn or one-eyed.
Ed Hawkins, laying it out, putting himself on the rack for your benefit. Very nice, Ed. Thank you.
Time for the Secret of an Odds Maker feature now. Know your enemy. Stuart Conroy, Betfair Sportsbook's cricket odds compiler, is joining us again to help us decipher the way to make money on the betting markets. Hi, Stuart. How are you doing?
Hi, Ed. I'm very good. Glad to be back. Thanks.
Yeah, great to have you. We thought this week we'd talk about innings runs lines, didn't we? Basically, the overs or the unders on an innings runs and basically how you come up with a runs quote for punters to go short or go long off. So let's talk about Test cricket first. Where on earth do you go get your data from and make a decision on what your runs line is going to be?
Yeah, we factor in a number of areas into it. Obviously, the ground itself is a big issue because obviously, with any level of cricket, some grounds are going to have bigger boundaries than others. Some are traditionally more high-scoring than others. A great example in England is Trent tends to be very, very high-scoring, as it proved over time, whereas other pitches that can be a little bit, you know, kind of where there's going to be turn. Sabina Park in Jamaica is one of those that traditionally doesn't come up with big scores. Antigua, where it comes up in big scores for T20 cricket, funny enough, when Test cricket comes around, it's the opposite. So that's a big factor in itself. Obviously, we look at the kind of conditions that's there. You know, kind of, is it planning to be sunny for the full 5 days? Is the deck going to be fairly flat? So all of these things kind of come into it as well. And then obviously you're looking at, you know, kind of the potentials, the batting lineup that's there, how many runs are potentially in each player over an innings. And you'd factor in both, depending on which side is going to bat first, I mean, how many runs it is. Normally you're starting, you've got your 11 down, and it'll work out how many runs you think you'll give to each player. And it's kind of a process which almost works backwards. So eventually when you put in all your runs for your players, you should pretty much have what should be an innings total. And at that point, you think, well, do we go over or under? So it's pretty much along those lines.
And what are you seeing punters doing in Test cricket? Going over mostly a runs quote, or are they going under on the five-day format?
Most punters tend to be positive. So they tend to back the overs. There's always an assumption there that players are going to score runs. Especially the bigger players. I mean, traditionally, if you look at somebody like, again, I know we spoke about him last week, Virat Kohli. I mean, Kohli's run line in a test match is pretty much, it's not going to be below 50. Like, that's a general assumption. And no matter how high you would put in that particular run line for Kohli, you know, people will still back the overs. That tends to go across a lot of formats for particular players that's there. Alistair Cook in Test cricket was always one of those. You would always expect people to be backing his overs, just down to his consistency over time.
Would you be a little bit cheeky and have them a little bit artificially high, Stuart?
You can from time to time. There's certain grounds where you've got to be quite wary of, from, you know, kind of on a run line where, I mean, traditionally, if you look at the Highvelds in South Africa, you know, the Wanderers ground has always been traditionally high scoring. So, you know, kind of you're always kind of be careful not to have your line too low, to be honest there. That's one particular ground. The old Chinnaswamy in India, again, same thing. You're always, you know, this is a high scoring ground. It's usually a batsman's paradise. So you're tending not to be, you know, kind of, some, these are grounds you will, you know, could go a little bit higher than normal than you would elsewhere.
In 2020 cricket, I know you've been looking at IPL data in prep for this phone call. What can you tell us about a 2020 runs line?
Yeah, funny enough, I had a look back on some of the data I'd done when just in preparation for a game last year. The game in particular was Mumbai against Royal Challengers Bangalore in the Chinnaswamy. And obviously we looked at kind of the side of, you know, kind of trying to work out where a run line is going to be pre-match. And traditionally what we would do is we would look at, you know, the home side, have their 11 and then work back from there to think, you know, how many runs are we going to give each player? And just as an example, I mean, that particular one, for when we looked at RCB batting first, they were opening at the time with Partiff Patel and Moeen Ali. So we kind of looked at their runs. So we had kind of 21 in for Patel, 24 for Ali. You'd Virat coming in at that stage, 42, usually 42 to 44 on a run line for Virat. Yeah. They also had AB de Villiers, who again is going to be quite high. So as we went through every single player, eventually the run line we came up with was 195. Mm. Now, enough, they didn't bat first. They batted second. Mumbai batted fourth. Put on 187. Now, in return to that, in the chase, RCB, they made 181. So we weren't a million miles off it. Usually it's always going to be higher for the side that bats first. So I think in that particular game, run line-wise, we probably were around the 190, 192 mark. So we try to be, that's to try and get it as accurate as possible.
And still seeing buyers at that market for Chinnaswamy Stadium, because obviously Chinnaswamy is a great batting wicket.
Yeah, I mean, in those games in particular, yeah, you're always going to get the punters that's in the overs. So, I mean, we're always going to be that little bit high. I mean, in that game, even from your players like Rohit Sharma, who are always going to, you know, big score, Yuvraj Singh, Kieran Pollard, you know, kind of Quinny de Kock, you know, all these guys who are known as big hitting batsmen. So on this case, this would have been, you know, punters just absolutely piling into the overs. So yeah, that would have been a kind of a, you know, kind of, you'd have your worries, you know, that whatever you do, don't go too high, because, you know, your liabilities are building up over time.
And what do you do about a game at a venue where you've got so little data on? It might have hosted only a couple of games. And you don't know what the pitch is going to do. Because we see so many pitches in India which are rarely used. They'll turn up at a venue which they haven't played at before. What does an odds maker do? Because for a punter, it's quite easy. We just say, we don't know what the wicket's like. We're not going to bet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in this case, I mean, in some cases, you're taking an educated guess. I mean, you're also kind of like, we're lucky enough, we have a huge encyclopedia of information on grounds, even domestic cricket in whatever country it is. So we can kind of look at some of these, whether it's in India, we can look at stuff like the Ranji Trophy and competitions like that. And we do it across, especially in the Caribbean as well. We get this from time to time at grounds that they wouldn't use often. So again, it's you wouldn't have as much confidence in it as you would, say, the likes of an IPL ground or a main international ground. But so in that case, yeah, you're always going to be a little bit more cautious on the line you're going to put up. But I mean, again, you're looking at the 211s you've got there, and that's going to be a big factor in it too, what way you're going to come up with the run line overall.
Okay, when you're looking at your runs line and you're trying to decipher which players are going to score runs, what data are you using? Are you using averages over 12 months, 2 years? You're obviously taking not outs and including them as a completed innings, or are you not doing that?
It's a number of things, to be honest. I mean, recent form is a big thing on that. We see it from time to time, obviously, as a tournament would progress. So the likes of the IPL, I mean, yeah, we're looking at traditional historical data over a number of years and how players are playing. We're also looking at players' form leading into a tournament. And then, obviously, as a tournament progresses, we're obviously starting to factor that in as well. Is a particular batsman having a bad run of form, and you'll start adjusting their lines accordingly based on that, or are they doing really well? And again, the same thing, just maybe just bumping their lines up that little bit. We had one particular one with the likes of Andre Russell. Andre Russell was a guy that was coming in, usually batting six or seven. So the danger is that, you know, he's coming in that low, you think, how much time is he going to have to actually bat and score a lot of runs? But as we've seen in games with Andre Russell, he doesn't need a huge amount of balls to put up a massive score. And that's the one thing we always have to be really, really careful of in these games.
Stuart Conroy giving away his secrets. He's going to be back next week to take us through the top bats markets. Thanks for this week, Stu.
No problem at all, Ed. Look forward to speaking to you again next week.
Pulling out all the stops then to keep you entertained in these difficult times, we thought, why not get an absolute legend on the phone and ask for some questions via our Twitter feed at Cricket Betting. It's only one of the greatest fast bowlers of all time, Mikey Holding. Hi, Mikey. Welcome back to Cricket Only Better.
Thank you very much, Ed. Glad to join you, not under these circumstances, but at least we can hopefully put some light in people's lives and in their days.
Yeah, indeed. Just try to help take people's minds off what's going on. It's great of you to agree to come on again. We've got plenty of questions to get through, Mikey.
I hope I can help.
The first one, does Mikey think it's plausible for cricket to find a way for behind closed doors action to take place in the coming months? That's from at Red Ball Tea.
No, to be honest, I know cricket and the sport is very, very important in people's lives. You know, sport gives people a sort of avenue away from the usual boredom of their work or frustrations or whatever is happening in their lives, if there are frustrations. But I think what is happening in the world right now is a lot more important than trying to play a sport. You know, people are talking about going, having no spectators at the games, or, you know, racing tried that in the UK for a few days. They tried it in Ireland for a few days. I don't think that is the way to go. I think everything needs to just close down and try our very best to do what the doctors and the scientists say we should do. Stay home as much as you possibly can. If you have to leave your home, if you have essential things that you have to do, practice this social distancing so that we can try and prevent this thing from spreading any further. It's going to spread. It is impossible for it to stop it. But until we get to the point where we say, okay, the amount of people are being contaminated is going down and we're getting smaller and smaller numbers, I think we just have to forget about sport, put that on the back burner, and hope we can save people's lives.
Amen to that. On similar vein, at Punter Rich is asking, when would you rather have racing back on? But what are you missing more, cricket or racing, Mikey? In your own personal taste, when you're having some downtime, what would you rather watch, a bit of cricket or racing?
Well, when I have my downtime, I watch racing. You know, cricket, I played cricket for 12 years for the West Indies. I played cricket for about 18 years professionally, or perhaps a little bit less than that. I now work in cricket. You know, I enjoy the game, obviously, because I wouldn't have spent so much time involved in the game if I didn't. But that is something that was my job and currently is still my job. My downtime has been doing something away from my work. I don't think doctors, when they leave the hospital, go home and start thinking about operations or how to heal a sick person. You know, they leave that behind, they get their downtime, they do something else, take their minds away from their job so that their minds get refreshed. And that's the same thing that I do.
Let's stay on the racing theme for a bit then. Stuart Conroy, our Betfair Sportsbook cricket odds compiler, wanted to ask you, what's your tip for the derby?
I'll tell Stuart that right now, I'm not even thinking about a derby. My thoughts are more with the people working in the industry, the hard times that they are going through, for how long they will have to go through those hard times because of the closing down of their sport. And of course, in particular, my very good friend Michael Stout and his missus in Newmarket, who is struggling a bit at this time. I don't intend to go into any details, but those are where my thoughts are, not on which horse is going to be running where.
A huge industry. The stable lads and lasses must be finding it very difficult indeed. Let's have a segue to cricket then, Mikey. At Arnold Rimmer 1. Ooh, this is a question. How do we make away test series closer? Away teams too often getting beaten convincingly.
Well, I put this forward a long time ago. And the first time I put it forward, I made it clear that it was not specifically my idea. I totally agree with it the first time I heard it. But I heard it first from Ricky Ponting, that when you have test series, the visiting team should automatically have won the toss. The visiting teams go out there, look at the pitch, and decide what they want to do. That is going to even it out to some degree. You still have hometown advantage, but you don't want the hometown advantage to go as far as the playing surface on which you are playing. If teams know that the visitors can decide exactly what they want to do, depending on the pitch that they see, I think you'll get a more even contest as far as the playing surface is concerned. Teams are better than teams. Some teams are better than some teams. And when they are playing at home in particular, they have that extra impetus because of the home crowd and their home situation. They go home at night, meaning to their own home. They have their families around them, which is totally different from a visiting team. So there are still things that will always give a home team an advantage to some degree. But you don't want it to then spill over onto the playing surface. And I think that will even out that aspect of it. I think that will make things a little bit more even. And I know it's unlikely to happen because although I work for the television companies, I know that is a big thing for them. For the toss is a big thing. That coin going up in the air and falling and the drama around it. And I'm absolutely sure that people don't want to get rid of that drama, but I think that would be a good way of slightly evening out the contest.
Yeah, we might have India less keen to produce Bunsen burner spinning pitches at home. And it also help a team like India when they go away to places like New Zealand to adapt better, wouldn't it? Because they've just got rolled in Kiwi land, haven't they, with their batsmen unable to cope with a seamy and swinging ball.
Yeah, well, you won't stop a ball from swinging. It's just a matter of the pitch on which you're playing. If it is swinging, you can't do anything about the atmosphere. But when you know a team has no fast bowlers or no seam bowlers and you prepare exceedingly green pitches, or when you know a team has no spinners and you prepare, as you say, bouncing burners, that is just not the way to go if you're going to see this game progress. So that is what I'm against. I think I said this before already, not in this medium, but the only country that I've ever been to where I see, I'm talking about tours now overseas, where I see same pitch being prepared irrespective of who is touring is Australia. When you go to Perth, you know what you're getting. When you go to Brisbane, you know what you're getting. When you go to Sydney, you know what you're getting. Adelaide, wherever you go, you know what you're getting, irrespective of the team that's touring. That is my experience in a way. Maybe other people have had different experiences.
John Houghton at The Old Batsman asks, what did you have against Brian Close?
What I had against Brian Close is the same thing that I've had against any opposition player. What they are playing for their team, I am playing for my team. And I am totally against anybody playing in the opposition. So if they think that I had anything personal against Brian Close, we have another thing coming.
Kevin Gillette asks, who would Mikey pick as England's bowling attack for a away Ashes series?
In this current squad?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me think. If they are all fit and well, I would have to start with Wood and Archer, of course. You know, I want my men with pace playing in Australia on those pitches. You got to have some pace, and they don't just have pace, they have control as well. I would stick with Stuart Broad because I think he can be very effective on the most conditions. And when he is on fire, he's on fire. You know, we know that he runs a little bit hot and cold sometimes, but when he is on fire, as we have seen, he's capable of taking 5, 6, 7 wickets in a couple of spells. So you don't want to be losing that sort of personality in your team and that sort of skill in your team. So those three come readily to mind. You know, there are some other guys around that could fit in around those three, but those three would be coming into my team immediately.
Thanks, Mike. You're coming back next week for part two of our questions from our Twitter followers and listeners.
Yes, so hopefully they'll be wanting to have me back next week, and they won't writing and say, don't have him back.
Never. Pressure's on, it's Mythbuster time, part of the show where we ram home the essential point of betting, wager on record rather than reputation. We take legends of the game and work out to £10 level stakes whether they'd have won you money.
Windy's opener, Gordon Greenwich, this week. We got an average price over his career from Betfair Sportsbooks, Stuart Conroy. Ooh, not such a long one this week from Stuart. I think he's a bit sensitive about what I said last week, but over the 17 years of his career, Gordon Greenwich was Mr. Dependable for the West Indies. Even with Viv, Desmond Haynes, Jeffrey Dujon in the batting lineup, he would still have been a relatively short price for top first innings run scorer. Over his career, I'd be laying him at an average of 5-2.
GG then, topped in his 9th, 10th and 11th tests. A buster record for a three-peat so early in his career. An amazing start. But not maintained, Sam Collins. 17 wins and 108 tests. Oh, you're not going to like this. He's -485.
Well, no, I'm rather thrilled about this, actually, because I just remembered that he was your choice, not mine, last week. So 108 tests. He doesn't fit the Hawkins criteria, does he?
No, but good team player.
For an opening batsman.
Good team player,
but too many players in that top order, perhaps. So, look, I think we've got to go back to, you know, you laid out your criteria for what you think a top opening batsman has got to fulfill. So I think we need to be going back to look for guys with, you know, 70 to 80 tests.
Mm.
I think we've got to practice what we preach, Ed. Who are we going for next week?
Well, I think in times of crisis, the only way you can go is to the glorious Gloucesters. Just start picking Gloucestershire players. What about Wally Hammond?
Go for it. It doesn't interest me that much.
What about Zahir Abbas?
You know, if you want to go Wally Hammond, sure. I mean, again, I
Hammond
prefer,
Yusuf. He didn't play for Gloucestershire. What about one of those three?
Okay, fine. You choose. Your choice.
Let's go for Zahir Abbas.
Done.
No, let's go for Mohamed Yusuf. Let's go for Mohamed Yusuf because I think he's going to be a winner.
Okay. Let's see. Have we done what Sri Lankan batsman have we done? We haven't done Murali or Jai Wardner, have we?
We haven't done Jai Wardner. We haven't done Sangakkara.
Not Murali, sorry. That's what I'm saying. That's what I meant, Sangakkara, not Murali. Famous Sri Lankan batsman, Murali. I think next week we should be looking at one of those two, is my call.
Okay. Do you want to just take the guys through the Mythbuster charts?
Not next week, sorry. The one after. Yeah. Mythbuster charts. Led at the moment by Imran Khan, +650, an almost impossible +650. Michael Golding, this week and next week's special guest, +285. Sir Richard Hadley, +184.37. Alan Donald, +147.83. Martin Crowe, +130. Andy Flower, +127. Murali, +105. Graham Swan, +56. Jimmy Anderson, +55. Sachin, a princely, +1.80. And the minuses, you know, Dravid, Sehwag, Warne, Lara, Bradman, -155, Wazee, Matt Cram, Langer, -210, Shander Paul, Gooch, -250, Hayden, -430, Ponting, -560, Gavaskar, -589. So we're putting Gordon Greenwich where? In just between, nestling between Matthew Hayden and Ricky Ponting.
Yeah.
On that wall of ignominy.
Yeah, we're trying to find a best value test 11, but we're also finding a worst value test 11. So let's see how we get on next time with Mohamed Yusuf. And then we'll look at Sangakkara or Jai Wardner. We'll debate that one again. But I think that's about it. It's time up, isn't it?
I think so, Ed. I think so. All too soon. As they say. I do hope this keeps other people's spirits up. It certainly does mine. And we're back next week with another Michael Holding Q&A. Is that right?
Yep.
And Stuart, who else have we got?
We've got Stuart Conroy coming back as well. He's going to delve into the matrix for us and tell us how he prices up the top bat markets. Please check out betting.betfair.
And will the Can we look forward to a virtual IPL?
We could find someone who could do us a virtual IPL. Maybe we could have a scout around in the week to see what we can drum up. Thanks for that. You're going to put me under pressure now. I've got to find somebody to do an algorithm of the entire IPL.
I do like to do that, yeah. I just like to keep you on your toes.
Okay. But do check out betting.betfair for the masterclass series across Test, ODI and T20. Until next time.